Hey leaders, it's Jennifer Ferguson. We collab lead with Jigsaw Learning, and I invite you to join me for this episode as I speak with Curtis Hewson as he recaps planning for facilitating meetings and provides five key considerations for actually facilitating those meetings and really talks about the process of those meetings and the idea that facilitation is a practiced and learned skill. Stay tuned.
Leading organizations with intentionality and purpose is complex work, and dedicated leaders work tirelessly each and every day to build impactful cultures of collaboration. But effective collaboration is difficult and messy. The good news is you don't have to do it alone. Join the Jigsaw Learning Team for Leading Collaborative Response, sharing insights for leaders committed to establishing, refining, and deepening collaborative response in their organization.
Welcome back to Leading Collaborative Response. I get the privilege again to speak with Curtis Hewson, lead learner and co-founder of Jigsaw Learning. So hi, Curtis.
Hi, Jen. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. Not too bad. We are off to a busy startup of the school year.
Oh, I know that. Always busy startup.
It's that time of year where teachers and parents and students are just getting the wheels going and building routines. And yes, it's absolutely a big shift.
It absolutely is. And for listeners or people watching the video up on YouTube, we're recording this on September 18th. So we are right in the flurry, but it feels like things are starting to get into regular routines once again, which is fantastic.
Yes, it's much easier to get my teenage children out of bed this week.
Understandable.
So, Curtis, you are a regular guest on this podcast. I mean, this really is all about collaborative response, which is you and Lorna and what you have grown from the ground up. We had a previous episode where we talked about five strategies for planning for team meetings. Do you want to just give that a quick recap?
Yeah, you bet. So we had talked about five things to consider, no matter what type of meeting that you're planning. And again, from that school perspective, but I would suggest a lot of the considerations can apply in any context for us. And they really revolve around clarity of purpose. Have you really made it crystal clear for everyone to know why we're coming together, especially if it's a team that's meeting on a regular basis or as part of a layering or structuring of different teams that are happening within the organization? Second is, do you have a very intentional agenda and note-taking document or process in place? Do you have norms established that you are referencing and utilizing to really refine that culture of collaboration? Do you have roles of who's going to do simple things like facilitation, record keeping, timekeeping, all of these things that can make the meeting that much more effective and productive? And then have you dedicated specific time to focus on celebrations? So those really are considerations when planning. And I really believe that where we're going today is talking about facilitating. But if you don't have a good plan in place, facilitation becomes much, much, much harder. And so much of the facilitation can be supported and augmented by having a really good plan in place, which for the teachers in us, that should not seem unusual at all. I know absolutely what it felt like to teach on the spot in a classroom where I had everything well planned and developed, or the days where I was winging it. I know which ones felt more easier to be able to really accomplish what I wanted to accomplish. Now, that was me. You've probably never gone into a classroom with the intention of winging it for that particular day.
You know, I was really, and then I had kids. And you know what? Some nights you had to go in the next day and you had things thought out in your head, but it wasn't as good as when you had that super structured plan. And I always likened it to herding cats because all of a sudden every idea was going off here, there, and everywhere. And it really was hard to bring everybody back to a focus. So absolutely, well, we are in agreement that having a plan, and I mean, I'm type A, so I mean, this is just my life in general, but when you have that plan, it's so much easier to have already thought out the next steps.
It is. And when you think about team meetings, often the meetings that we're having are repeatable. You know, we meet once a week, we meet once a month. If we can get it so that it's repeatable, predictable, and with clarity, it doesn't mean that the planning takes a ton of time. It's actually becomes repeatable. These are the roles and we've become very used to them. These are the norms and we don't have to recreate them each and every time. It just becomes so much easier when that plan is in place and we just keep cycling it.
Well, because at that point it becomes a routine.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is how we operate. And so when you think about, again, as a teacher setting up a classroom, how do you want your classroom to run? What do kids do when they walk in the morning? How do they go? Yeah. Like all of those things make things run easier when you front load them. So we are wholeheartedly in agreement here, Curtis, about the planning.
Well, so I think it also comes down to, and we didn't talk about it in that podcast and we won't today either, but even how you set up the physical space. Maybe that's something we'll talk about in a future podcast, is how you construct that physical space. In our podcast around building a culture of collaboration, we had brought on a guest earlier, Grayson James, who talked about the idea of the physical space really matters too. And again, let's go back to the comparing it to a classroom. We often called it the third teacher in that space, that the physical environment you have matters. And again, it's how have you planned to set up really strong and really sound collaboration within those meetings. We'll be right back to continue this episode. Team meeting space checklist that we've developed. The great thing about this checklist is it has links to a folder that includes pictures to be able to look at, a blog that goes much, much deeper, and a further podcast that talks about considerations, not just for the physical setup, but other things when you're coming together to meet as a team. And now back to our conversation.
So I think we've hammered home the message of planning ahead. So let's go into the assumption that, okay, we have planned as best we can. And I mean, we are still operating under Ready, Fire, Aim. So
yeah,
don't spend too much time planning before you start. Just go in with a plan. But now we're in a meeting and it's somebody's job to essentially run the meeting, right? They're the facilitator. Yeah. This is the person who's going to guide through the agenda. You have five considerations for those people. What would you suggest for those that are in that role?
Well, before I hit on the five, I think it's important to really see this as a bit of a shift from a more traditional way of thinking of chairing a meeting. If I'm chairing, all that I'm doing is just working through the agenda, right? And okay, well, we came to this section and it has on the agenda that Jen's going to speak to it. So you go ahead and speak to that, Jen. I would argue when we facilitate, we are taking on a much more active role and one that involves some really strategic ways of being so that we're not manipulating people within the room at all, but we're being very intentional on facilitating and bringing in everyone's voice, building that vulnerability within the room and ensuring that we are maximizing the time that we have together. So chairing a meeting is not enough. I would suggest facilitating is important. And when doing so, the five considerations I would have is, first, focus on facilitation if that's your job for the meeting. That's a big one. Next is, if that's your job, that means other people have other jobs. So how do you utilize those roles effectively as the facilitator so that you're not trying to do it all by yourself? And again, there's a link to the planning component. Third is ensuring equality of voice and that we are getting everybody's voice and active participation involved. The use of paraphrasing becomes really critical. And then that fifth is being able to not only listen for, but assign actions so that we're walking away with our next steps, that we know really clearly from this conversation what's happening, rather than we just talked and does anyone really know where we're going next?
So those considerations in my world really highlight the fact that, you know, it's an art, facilitation. It's not really a science, right? So I think we need to break those down, because I know that your experience as a facilitator and even my own, that it's not just as easy as, okay, focus on facilitation.
Yeah.
What does that actually mean?
Yeah. So when I say focus on facilitation, it comes from a place of past mistakes where I did not do that as a leader. I did not recognize or value the idea of establishing roles and really ensuring that everyone was taking a part of shared responsibility for this conversation, this discussion moving forward effectively. So I made the mistake of thinking that I could run the meeting. I'll take the notes so everyone else can just focus. I'll keep track of time. If somebody's not or going off on a tangent, I'll jump in and bring them back. Everyone else just focus on the discussion. I'll do the heavy lifting. And it was foolhardy. I recognize now that there were a couple of things. One was the success or often failure of the conversations was left directly onto one person. It wasn't building up confidence or competence for anyone else in the room. But even more importantly, I didn't do any of those jobs well. I would get lost trying to facilitate the conversation because I was trying to capture what was the last thing said in the notes. I'd miss parts of the notes because I was focusing in on what people were saying. And then all of a sudden go, oh my goodness, I haven't looked at the time in 20 minutes. Oh, we need to get moving on to something else. It was really, really foolhardy and went through some hard knocks to understand, let's make jobs. And then if I take on the job of a facilitator, I want to, A, rely on the people that are doing the others to do their job and trust that they will, which we'll get to next, but then focus on the facilitation. And by that, I mean really listening to what people are saying, asking clarifying questions. And we often hear the idea of you're not really listening if you're just formulating in your head what you're going to say as soon as this next person stops talking. For not to have that capacity to be, or to have that thought in our head that we're truly listening, and it'll come up with some of the other things that we want to do as a facilitator, asking questions for clarity and really taking the time to focus in. And sometimes it's even that physical focusing of, have I got eye contact with the person who is speaking rather than they're speaking, but I'm just checking my phone because it buzzed, or I'm noticing something over here. So I'm listening, but I'm doing something here. No, I'm there. I'm physically turned towards you. Oftentimes I find as a facilitator, even just the leaning in can send the verbal recognition that I'm with you. I'm listening to your part of the conversation right now. That's what I mean when I say focus on facilitation. Pay real careful attention to what you're doing in that particular role.
The role of the facilitator has enough multitasking in and of itself.
Yeah.
It really does not need to take on the additional tasks of additional roles. And you spoke, Curtis, very eloquently, and I just want to highlight, like, it is well-intentioned when leaders don't want to put more on their staff.
That was exactly it. Didn't want to. People are really, really busy. And if I could take something off their plate for the next 45 minutes while we're talking, great. But again, wasn't the most effective way to do it.
And I've heard you talk about it. I've heard Marilyn and Colette and Lorna, and then a variety of principals in the various partnerships that we have. They all talk about that part of their journey, right? They really want the best for their staff, but they needed to learn how to be the best facilitator. Or for some of them, they gave the facilitation to another person so that they could take on a different role.
And I would say if that's the case, and that is fantastic to be able to distribute that, that we're not saying, okay, Jen, you'll facilitate today and I'll back off completely. I think as good leaders, where Jen's going to facilitate today, but I'm going to jump in to help coach, oh, let's pause for a second and bring back that you're building up leadership and facilitation skills in others as well.
Absolutely. It's that side-by-side sort of coaching opportunity that can happen in that respect.
It is, absolutely.
So we have our facilitator. They're really focused now on their role. Mm-hmm. But we know that there are other roles that are needed in the meeting. So how, as a facilitator, do you leverage those roles?
Well, oftentimes as a facilitator, I'll have a notepad in front of me all the time, just to jot notes. And one of the things I'll often do is just put a reminder on it to reminder timekeeper, so that I remember to say, hey, for this part of the conversation, can we set 10 minutes, or we're going to talk for 2 minutes on this so that we're bringing in that timekeeper role. And I forget quite often to do that. I find if I take the notes, it helps to be able to give instructions for the person who's recording notes. For instance, to say, Jen, can you hold off putting anything in the notes yet until we get clarity? Or can we pause for a second? Jen, is there anything else that you need in order for the notes for this? Or is that clear? Or any other roles that we might have? You know, if somebody has said, and I was working with a team last week where they have the disruptor role, and it's their job to be essentially devil's advocate for anything that's happening, to always take the alternate perspective, even if it's not something they believe in, just to push the team. And as a facilitator, trying to invite that person in to say, okay, I think this is a really good point for Kelly to jump in as our disruptors, or anything that you would add for this. I think being able to utilize the roles and being mindful of that is really, really important. And again, that's, you're right, there is a bit of multitasking within the facilitator role itself, but taking some of those notes are great. And sometimes it's the letting the people at the onset of the meeting to say, okay, timekeeper, I'll try and remind you, but if you're wondering about setting a time, if you could just interrupt, or even just do a visual, you know, some kind of hand signal. Or oftentimes we'll have organizations where they'll set the roles and they'll have little roll cards in front, or table displays, just to lift it up as a reminder. I've often had that. I had it last week with someone who was the timekeeper, and they went like that when we started and went, oh, right. Thanks for reminding me. Could we set a 10 minute for this particular time? Again, utilizing those roles becomes really important. And I think it's the facilitator's job to help invite in or just remind people. And over time, then it just becomes natural. Of, I've been the timekeeper several times. I know the facilitator forgets to ask me to set times. I'll jump in.
Again, it's that building of routine, and yeah, we're all human. I mean, there are days 100%. When, even when you and I do this to have these conversations, there are days I know I'm like on and it's great. And then there's days where, oh yeah, I wanted to do this, or I wanted to ask it that way. Or so to know that you can count on those people around you.
100%. And again, we're talking about considerations for facilitating meetings, but I still have many times where I'll walk out and go, oh, I missed this. I should have caught this. It's, I think we'll probably get to this a little bit later in the podcast, but being easy on yourself and not being too critical is really important.
Absolutely. So we've taken on the role of facilitator. We've ensured the distribution of roles, and we're relying on the people around us. How do we make sure as facilitator that I'm not the one that's expected to talk the whole meeting?
So getting that equality of voice is important. So for any of the listeners, if you want to search out, and Jen, if we could put it in the show notes or in the YouTube description, a little video from a gentleman by the name of Charles Duhigg, who talks about how Google creates the perfect team. And it's describing a project that they did a number of years ago called Project Aristotle, where they were trying to find out what made highly effective teams. And they started with the premise of it must have to do with composition. We have to get the right mix. And they found out through this study that actually who was in the room mattered much, much less than how the people in the room operated. The way they engaged was the most probable predictor of team success. And within that, they found out, A, that there had to be psychological safety. So the idea that I can say something and people will be receptive. And again, this is why norms are important. Creation of roles, predictability, routines, they all matter. As a facilitator, modeling effective listening, that's really important for us. But the second thing that they found was critical was equality of voice, that everyone is speaking roughly the same amount. And you and I have both been in meetings. I've been guilty of being the person in the meeting that dominated conversation. And we've had meetings where there's five of us in the room, but three people took on most of the airtime while another two were not. And again, not to be critical, because I've been that person myself. I've been on both sides of it. Of I've walked away from a meeting not saying what I not getting my thoughts out, and other times where, oh my goodness, I totally took up all the airspace and didn't allow for anyone else to share. So I think as a facilitator, keeping that in mind of how do we bring in voice? So a couple of really specific strategies I've used is I'll often have on, again, that notepad, a list of who's in the room, and just I'll take quick little tally notes to show how many times have we talked and, you know, haven't heard from Jen for a while. So Jen, what do you think? I often find as a facilitator, giving a heads up on that helps to be able to say, all right, Jen, in a few moments, I want to ask your thoughts on this. So if you want to be ready for that. And I think that's just setting up everyone so that no one's on the spot, or to be able to say, all right, let's, and we do this in our own team meetings, let's everyone take 5 minutes to review our last set of notes, make your own questions and comments, and then we'll go around and everyone will get a chance to interject. Jen, what was something that you have a question about from our last, rather than just opening up and say, all right, anyone have questions from our last meeting? And the people who are naturally just able to quickly respond or maybe pre-prepped are there, and then we miss voices. I often find too that as soon as we can in the meeting to get everyone's voice started is important. So we often will start meetings with, okay, just a quick opener. What's one thing that you learned this week, or one thing that stood out from the weekend? We'll just go around, and it's just almost revving the engines to get everyone's voice right from the start to be involved. But then I think this is why the planning becomes so valuable, because if I can even make a role, for instance, if we find that in this particular meeting, it's quite natural that some people are taking up the majority of the voice and others aren't, I might create a role to say that this person is the turn taker and they're going to keep interjecting when we haven't heard from somebody, or creating a predictable routine of this time, everyone has 5 bingo chips in front of them for this meeting. And every time that you make a suggestion, throw a chip in the middle. Once you get to 5, it doesn't mean you're done talking. It means that it's now your job to ask other people what they think so they can use up their chips as well. So just simple little strategies that, again, over time, create the opportunity and the expectation that we want to hear from everybody in equal amounts of time, recognizing there's always going to be times in teams where Jen's going to take the majority of the floor because she's the person best positioned to speak to that. But then before we jump to something else, I want to turn over and say, so Philip, do you have any questions from this? I haven't heard from you for a little while. Glenda, what's something that's resonating for you? So I think as a facilitator, making sure that everyone is involved. And again, your norms can help support that. I see virtually every team have some variation of a norm that says equal voice, opportunity for all, will solicit the opinions of each other. If that's a norm, saying we're going to practice that today. So Jen, it's your job to keep track of how many times each person speaks. And at the end, let's just do a quick little reflection.
I'm glad you tied that on at the end, because I was just about to jump in and say, right, the connection between the strategies you're talking about, the tallies, the bingo chips, et cetera, becomes a part of the process when you go back and review the norms. Because like you said, most people will agree that everybody at the table should have an opportunity to speak and share and ask questions and be involved. We come to these places in collaboration wanting from others because we don't have all the answers ourselves.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, and we talked about this in the last podcast, when you set norms, I mean, we come and assume that everyone wants to hear from each other in the meeting, but unless we articulate it clearly, sometimes that can get lost. And when it's articulated clearly, then as a facilitator, it's super easy for me to say, all right, today, let's focus in on this norm of everyone's voice matters. So how should we ensure everyone's voice gets brought in today?
Absolutely. And so just like what you've done, right? You've taken a norm and you've paraphrased it into a question to get the involvement of others. We know how important paraphrasing is in that demonstration of active listening and being engaged. So do you want to talk about paraphrasing from the facilitator perspective?
Yeah, and I think this really goes, Jen, with an earlier consideration, which is focus on facilitation. It's really hard to be paraphrasing if I haven't really been listening to what a person is saying. But the idea of being able to say, so Jen, what I think we heard was X, have we got that right? Or to be able to turn and say, so Tim, if you could summarize what we think we heard from Jen, what would you say is there? And then Jen, have we got that right? And what that's doing is, again, modeling for everyone else how we are listening and paying attention. And in time, it's not just the facilitator asking that, it's others. And you and I have a team member who's become very good at saying, so I'd really like to hear what this person thinks of what it is that we've said, and try and help paraphrase back. But I think as a facilitator, that paraphrasing, just make sure that, did I hear what I think I heard? And getting that confirmation back is important. And it really helps those in the meeting feel listened to as well and confirmed, and the opportunity to say, no, I must not have been clear in my communication, because that's not really what I was trying to say. Again, it just helps build clarity amongst the entire team. And I think as a facilitator, it becomes part of our role to not only model that, but practice it regularly within the meeting.
So on the topic of practice, Curtis, I know that we have a blog post that talks about questions and discussion resources.
Yeah.
And I will make sure that I link that in the show notes, but you have a whole host of questions facilitators could be asking to invite more to understand so that people can paraphrase themselves. You have question cards so that other people can put down, again, I think I'm hearing this, or what if, or I find it interesting, or that sounds like.
Yeah. We'll be right back to continue this episode.
In the spring, we often find ourselves stretched between two worlds, with one foot in the year wrapping up and the other foot in the year to come. This messy middle presents many challenges, but also provides opportunities to learn from the past and plan for the future. Join us for the online workshop, Planning for Fall Startup, Reengaging Collaborative Response, part of our Supporting Collaborative Response series. In this on-demand workshop, I will share 5 ways to reflect on learnings from the current school year and 5 considerations for planning for the new year. I'll also be sharing numerous resources, templates, and samples that will support you in your learning. Access this on-demand workshop and you'll have the ability to view, replay any or all of the workshop when it best fits your time. Register today to learn more about how the fall startup can be an excellent opportunity to re-energize your school's collaborative response efforts.
And now back to our conversation. And so I think the use of something as simple as question cards, again, helps build a deeper culture of collaboration, where instead of the facilitator being the one to say it, now all of you have question cards around. The expectation today is that everyone uses 2 of those. And like you said, simple prompts like, I think what you're saying is dot, dot, dot. And now when I'm saying it, where before it might be really, I might feel a little bit hesitant to say that to a colleague because they might take it the wrong way, or, you know, it sometimes those asking questions of each other can be really tricky spots to get into if you're not comfortable, if you don't have that sense of trust and vulnerability in the team. The strategies like those question cards normalize it. It's, well, I have to ask because that was the expectation today of asking at least 2. And then in time, we don't need question cards because this is just how we operate.
Building capacity through the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And process matters so much.
And so on the topic of process, I know that when we speak specifically to the collaborative team meeting, but the vast majority of meetings, when we talk about collaborative response, that process really is about action. Action to support students, actions to support each other. So as the facilitator, how do you listen for opportunities to capitalize on potential actions?
Absolutely. So again, it comes back to the, are you focused on facilitation and that active listening, but being able to, wherever there is the indication or opportunity to assign action, we do. So that again, when we're together, we are highly, highly action focused. And again, it's with the understanding that the actions we put in place may or may not work. That's not the purpose. It's that we have it clearly identified who's going to do what as a result of the conversation. So it may be as simple as when we start celebrations and you share, I utilized this checklist 2 weeks ago and it seemed to be really effective for me to be able to say, Jen, could we add into the notes document, Frank, in the recording of the notes, would it be all right if we asked for you to share out a copy of what that checklist looks like? And when you say, yeah, no problem, then we'll ask, okay, Frank, can you get that down? And Jen, I know you've got a busy week by Friday. Would that be fair? So again, we're putting deadlines. It's getting recorded into the notes. Then Jen can walk away with here's three things I have to do as a result of the meeting. And I know that within our own meetings, internally within Jigsaw Learning, when we can walk away with five people in a conversation, each one has 2 to 5 next steps. You multiply that out, there's a lot of next steps that are happening collectively from the team. So to be able to ask, and I always like being highly respectful to say, Jen, would it be okay if we put that down as an action for you? What date would work for that? Or maybe it's in alignment with this, or it sounds like we have an action here. Is there anyone willing to take that on for us, or anyone else? So there might be actions that are open-ended in regards to who do we assign to be able to take that on. And this is within our WeCollab software becomes really valuable, because then at the end of the meeting, I can get that reminder that says, here's our notes and here's 4 things that you said you would do, and becomes really clear of what do I take away from this conversation? How do we share that responsibility of next steps so that every conversation is moving us somewhere?
Yeah, I think about the collaborative team meeting process, and like you said, in WeCollab, and even just like you said, the highly respectful pieces, right? So we go through a process of brainstorming, right? Here's our key issue. What are some ways that we can address the key issue, setting the students aside for the moment?
Yeah, just
brainstorming as much as we can, but then coming back to each teacher who had a student that had been listed and say, okay, when you think about Johnny over here, what is one thing from the list that you might be able to do? And they can pick, right? It's a respectful process, and it really highlights the professionalism of everyone around the table, right? I'm not telling you have to. That's not my role as a facilitator.
No,
I'm just asking you to identify what you're willing to take on and in the time frame you think you can get that done.
Absolutely. And I think that becomes critically important. And Jen, you're bang on with the idea of the role of the facilitator is just bringing that out from everyone and then being able to come back and ask, so will you need any help with that particular next step? Or is there any clarity that you need further to be able to accomplish that? So to me, as a facilitator, being able to listen for those opportunities of what are the next steps we can be taking and the actions that we can be deploying as a result of the conversation. We all have been in meetings where half hour later you walk away and go, I don't know where we landed. I'm not sure where we're going next and who's doing what to help us get there.
Absolutely. And so the nice thing about recording those actions, I mean, I'm the kind of person that likes to see for myself, here's the things I accomplished. So, I mean, there's that personal point of pride. But when you have your collaborative team meetings, whether it's about students or whether we're in that collaborative planning time and we're assigning actions from there, you're gathering evidence of the work that you're doing as well. So if someone ever came to you and said, what have you been doing about this issue with this student? You can say, well, actually, here's the list of things that we've done.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I think these considerations that I've shared A lot of it has come through missteps and mistakes made trying to facilitate meetings in the past, and learning that's happened through lived experience, through observation, and through getting feedback as well from others, that I think is really, really valuable.
So I know, Curtis, that we do have a feedback process with Jigsaw Learning that I would like to invite people to consider, because having been someone who has received the feedback in this scenario, as well as even just going back to those times from a coaching perspective where I was requesting feedback and having my own lessons videotaped and taking an actual look at things, that process is highly valuable because it's objective. It's not evaluative. It really is about, here's what I am. How might I get better? So do you want to talk a little bit about how that happens through Jigsaw Learning?
Yeah. So I'd encourage anyone who's listening to reach out if you have any interest or questions around that particular support or service, because we do have teams that either record team meetings, send them in, and we provide feedback written and then follow up with a debrief conversation that is very much about, let's celebrate the great things that we saw and what are some potential considerations to help continued refinement and continuous improvement. We've also then come and sat as observers in primarily what we refer to as the collaborative team meeting, but in any type of meeting, to be able to give feedback to help support overall growth. We also come in and engage in workshops with facilitators where the organization is so large, a single leader can't possibly be involved in everyone. And in time, we want to build out the capacity for others to facilitate team conversations. So we also engage in workshops to be able to help build out that skill set for others as well. We also have been developing a free webinar that breaks down some of the things I shared today, some of the things from our previous podcasts on planning. And so I'd encourage our listeners and viewers to make sure they sign up for the JL Insider, because when that on-demand free webinar is available, it may be something highly valuable for you or any of your team members to take a look at.
So signing up to be a JL Insider is in every one of our show notes. And I will make sure that in this one, we also include the link to the team meeting feedback process, if that's something of interest to you, so that you can just click and then reach out.
Yeah. And the resource that you'll be sharing around the team meeting feedback is specifically focused on something we refer to as the collaborative team meeting, but it really can be applied to any situations. I've had a couple principals that have asked, can you come watch a staff meeting? I'd love some feedback because it feels like we run in circles a lot.
The hamster wheel of the staff meetings.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Curtis, before I let you go, I have one really important question. We know that facilitation is an art. There is a bit of a science to it, but it's an art.
And the science a lot of time comes in the pre-planning
phase, right? Yeah. But how do you respond to someone who just says, I'm not a natural facilitator, I can't do that?
Yeah, and I think that really aligns with Carol Dweck's idea of mindsets. And as I take it from a growth mindset perspective of, you're not a natural facilitator yet. I think that's really important. This is not a inherited skill set, but a learned one. And I would just encourage people to practice. And over time, things will become more natural. I am much, much, much better now than I was a decade ago at remembering to ask questions, remembering to paraphrase, to be able to listen, direct people around the room. It really comes from practice, to be able to do over and over again, and being really intentional in the planning and what it is that you're trying to accomplish. So again, I come back often, and I'll hear this lots of, you know, someone will watch a team meeting clip or something and, oh, you make it look so easy. I don't think I could do that with my own team. And my response always is, the looking easy is many, many, many years behind it to get to that place. It didn't look like that 20 years ago at all. And so I think that would be the biggest thing that I could say to people is facilitating is, like you said, that art with a science of planning behind it, but it comes and it builds over time, and focus on building that skill set. It's like any other skill that gets better and better with practice over time.
So I'm not going to throw you under the bus, Curtis, but I've known you for a really long time, and I've had the opportunity to see you facilitate meetings for well over a decade now. And I'm a witness to the growth.
Yeah, that's because you're one of the poor people who had to sit in one of those 10 years ago and go, oh my goodness, where are we going? What are we doing here?
But that growth comes from your willingness to listen to feedback and your willingness to reflect on, okay, well, this is what I did and how might I do it better? So I always talk to students, right? And the conversation I always had with them, you know, how did you get good at hockey? Well, I go to practice. How did you get good at playing piano? Well, I practiced. How are you going to get good at facilitating? You're going to have to practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that idea, and I still try and practice it every time of when I'm prepping for the next meeting or get into it, what's one thing I could do just a little bit better than the last time? I believe that's not just a mindset to take into facilitating team meetings, but one for life of how am I getting just incrementally better at whatever it is that I'm engaging in.
Well, Curtis, I think that notion of incremental sustainable improvement is a really good one to end on. So thank you so much for your time today. And again, to our listeners, to our audience, by all means, check out the show notes for links to the various resources that Curtis has shared and reach out. That is really what we're here for, because we want to support you in doing, in your context, the best you can for your students, your staff, your people.
Always a pleasure, Jen. Thanks so much.
Take care. Curtis's humility in his own growth always warms my heart, because he is a person who truly believes that we continue to evolve and get better. And so one of the first key learnings I want to point out is that facilitation is a learned skill. It will take practice. Some people, yes, they are more naturally inclined to facilitate and ask those questions. But I hope that Curtis has given some key considerations so that there are things that you can consider as you try to incrementally improve yourself as a facilitator, knowing that it is going to take practice. We can't all walk into a meeting being a master facilitator. The second piece of this, though, is that facilitation is not the same as chairing a meeting. And so that role becomes really important, because it's not just about hitting those bullet points where a chair of a meeting might be inclined to shut down conversation or move on to the next topic. Yes, there's time pieces in collaborative team meetings when we specifically talk about those. But really, that facilitator is inviting conversation, engaging other people in it, and making sure, again, he talked about a quality of voice is happening, and implementing strategies so that people are feeling confident when they do ask those paraphrasing questions, because that is a task that's been asked of them, instead of them feeling like they are potentially exposing themselves to their colleagues by asking for that clarification or asking for some support. The third key learning that I want to talk about really is that notion of the intertwined art and science of facilitation. The art is in the actual practice and how it happens. And just like teaching, every facilitator has a charisma about them as they guide people through the meeting and ask those questions and smile at the right time and pull out and lean in. And it really is a personal approach because it's inherent. But the science part of it really is about that planning to facilitate so that the meeting does have a path that can be followed and that we are building out those routines. the order of the meeting, the structure, the different roles that we have assigned in those meetings, so that they become more effective and more efficient. Because again, the more that we practice things, the more we're able to internalize them. So when we sort of front load the idea of a meeting with a structured agenda that has been well planned for, the routines are easier to slide into and become just a part of how we operate. So again, facilitation will take practice. It's an art and a science, and it can be planned for. Thanks again to Curtis for highlighting some of the other considerations that can be thought about as we continue to gravitate towards our growth mindset and improving what we do for the staff and students that we serve.
For more on collaborative response, visit jigsawlearning.ca or join the JL Insider to receive access to newly added resources and content. Make sure to follow us on social media. Subscribe to the podcast and the Jigsaw Learning YouTube channel to access past and upcoming episodes.